Well, Operation Homecoming is a project that was created by the National Endowment for the Arts. And what we're trying to do was, as the troops came out of combat rotation from Iraq and Afghanistan, to give them an opportunity to reflect on what had happened and to write about it. I'm Dana Gioia. I'm the chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts, and I was the person who originated the project.
My name is Andrew Carroll. I'm the editor of Operation Homecoming, and I'm the one who worked with the troops and their families. And we get so much of what war looks like, what it sounds like. We hear it on the news. We don't get what it feels like, and you can only get that from the people who have that eyewitness perspective.
So the pieces range from everything from what the latrines are like, to what it's really like when you're under fire, to what it's like evacuating the wounded.
March 27th, 2003.
Ted Jewell was a doctor who served on the USNS Comfort. This was the hospital ship docked right outside of Bahrain.
The Comfort is the slowest ship in the water. We couldn't outrun a rowboat. Huge red crosses on our sides and decks mark the optimum spots to aim a torpedo or rocket to sink us. As a non-combatant ship, Comfort is, of course, unarmed. Would the Iraqis attack a hospital ship if they could? Why not? In their view, they were invaded by mercenary infidels who deserve no better. A surgeon buddy, Mike from Massachusetts, thinks an attack on our ship is a near given, with a 50% chance of success. However, Mike is a proctologist and a Red Sox fan, and naturally pessimistic.
This book is funny. I mean, that's another thing I think surprises people is how funny it is at times.
And we have a very funny piece, more poignant, really, of a man who was both a soldier and a Marine, but it's his wife who goes off to serve. He's left home taking care of their three kids, and he said, this is scarier than anything I ever did when I was in the military.
This Marine that Andy's talking about just realizes the sheer absurdity of his life. Here's a Marine at home with three kids, and he can't manage them.
And whereas his wife is off risking her life in Iraq.
And his only form of socialization is the officer's wives' club.
You know, and he's like, do you want me hanging out with your wife?
And he's clearly not welcome hanging around the officer's wives club, but it's a very funny piece.
Another soldier in Afghanistan, Clint Douglas, he talks about having, it's called Lunch with Pirates, this meal with an Afghan warlord who's technically on our side, but is also currying favor with the Taliban. But here they are sitting down in this dilapidated castle, exchanging pleasantries and having this very nice dinner together, when in fact, they're trying to kill each other.
Who are the terrorists and where are they? If you and your men know the area and who the troublemakers are, then tell us. Give me their names and their addresses. We know that there are Taliban in Gardez. The firebase is attacked regularly. Bombs are planted along the roads and bandits set up illegal checkpoints to rob the people. You say that you can help us, then help us. The room exploded into arm waving and excited jabbering and the Terp was overwhelmed. General Audin says that they do not know who these people are, but if they find them, then they would gladly torture them for you, the Terp said affably, while trying to keep up with the six men who were all speaking to him at once. The mention of torture apparently brought all of the Afghan factions in the room together, and now all of them were animated and jabbering and laughing, and the tension eased. I lit a cigarette and waited for the room to quiet a bit. Now what are they talking about? I asked the Terp after the commotion seemed to die down. They're still talking about torturing their enemies.
When you think about it, troops are taught to communicate efficiently. And that, to me, is really the secret of great storytelling, is just tell the story. Give us the account.
One moment he was alive and curious, and the next he was just a scattering.
And then you have a poem by someone named Robert Schaefer about watching a group of fellow soldiers walk into a landmine.
But the second was still alive, and so to help him without thinking, others ran into that minefield. Pop. We two now running, and I fastest, first, frozen. By the sight of so much crimson-soaked clothing, I didn't know where to start. Covered with the blood of others, later I was, mistaken as a casualty myself. But I would not let them take my uniform. They would still live as long as evidence of them remained on my sleeves, torn as they grasped for a few extra moments.
Something else that impressed me about the project in general is that, I mean, I grew up with people that had fought World War II. You know, all the men in my family had fought World War II. They never talked about it. Somehow it was considered, you don't tell your family what you went through. You fought the war actually to protect them from knowing this.
I was shocked to watch these troops open up so candidly. And I remember going up to one of them at Fort Bragg, and these are special forces. These are the toughest of the tough. And I said to one of them, why are you doing this? And he looked at me, very simple response. It's the first time anyone asked us. And this small semicircle of troops around him all nodded, sort of quietly in agreement.
Will your children someday say, "I'm sure glad Dad died to make Iraq safer"? No. They died standing with their friends, doing their jobs, fulfilling some far-flung, nearly non-existent notion called duty. They died because their friends could have died just as easily, and knowing that, they would never shirk their duties, never call in sick, never give in to fear, never let down.
John McCary had lost some members of his unit, and in this almost stream of consciousness email he sends back to his mom, he literally says, "Mom, I'm shaken."
When you've held a conversation with a man, briefed him on his mission, his objective, and reminded him of the potential consequences during the actioning of it, only to hear he never returned and did not die gracefully, though blessedly quickly, prayerfully painlessly. You do not breathe the same ever after. Breath is sweet. Sleep is sweeter. Friends are priceless. And you cry. There's no point, no gain, no benefit. But you are human and you must mourn. It is your nature.
It really is quite exhilarating to think that now that the idea is out there, it has to continue. And future generations of troops and their families will feel our voices do matter and we need to put them down and we need to share them.
You bring the voices of the troops into the national conversation.
And that's what these pieces do, is that war for most of us is very abstract and remote. These pieces make it very real.
Just outside the door, I found a boy waiting for me. "Thank you," he said, his light brown eyes looking straight into mine. And then he smiled with what seemed years worth of relief. Despite all my reservations about this war, I could not help but wonder if he was thanking me for freeing father, uncle, or brother from some cell like that I'd walked so easily out of.
Helen Gerhardt is one example of this. She talked about what it was like going that first wave into Iraq and seeing the Iraqis as they drove down these long highways. And that's really the beauty of her piece, is talking about what did it feel like in those first few days to be going into a foreign and essentially hostile country.
Let me say one other thing. You know, when I first came to the National Endowment for the Arts, I had the same advice universally from everybody in Washington. They said, if you're going to run the endowment, stay out of controversies. I can't imagine a project that we could have undertaken that was more potentially controversial than this. But it struck me as that the purpose of running a federal arts agency isn't to either indulge in controversy or avoid controversy. It's to do things of importance and excellence. And so I feel gratified that by doing it the right way, the thing turned out well. So I think Andy and I feel that we did something that was unprecedented, and that's a nice feeling.
I couldn't agree more. I'm so proud of what these troops and their families have done. There's no project of all the ones I've been involved with in my life that's meant more to me or that's been more meaningful overall than this one. And I think it will last for a long time.
I sit writing here among these ruins, looking out the unbarred window, thinking of you, missing you always. With all my love, Helen.